You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 74. Today is September 22nd. Of course, as we record this, it's a couple days early for me and Steve this time. I'm Van Burnett. He's Steve Gisuelli. We are thrilled to have you guys with us for another great show of Wins Above Fantasy. We're going to be talking about interesting late season performances. Nice little spinoff, Steve, from a topic we were kind of teasing a couple weeks back. And really the general idea is that people tend to switch over mentally this time of year. And whether it's fantasy football or they're just a little jaded from having gone through the grind and not won, whatever the case may be. Every year, there's kind of an opportunity here when everyone switches off to pay attention to some trends and some production. So we'll talk about all that stuff and how it might impact next year as well throughout the show. But love having you guys with us. You guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsBovePod. I'm at Van_Verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. Steve, welcome back, man. How's fatherhood going? How's mid-September going for you?
It's good. It's good, man. Still enjoying some, I guess it's now seasonably, but it's been really warm here, which is, you know, we kind of just go from summer to fall, which, or summer to winter. There's no really in between.
I was going to say, most people go summer to fall. It's just how the seasons go, Steve.
Yes, that's normally how it works, but here in the Northeast, it usually just goes from like 80 degrees one day to like 50 and 40 the next. We're still in like the 80 degrees, which I don't mind. I know some people really like the 60 degree afternoons, 45, 50 mornings, which is nice, you know, football weather, that sort of thing. But we're still having an extended summer here, which whatever. I don't mind a few extra days down the shore for me. Grinding it out, still having some leagues going on. I was just eliminated in my other home league in a playoff series, which was tough. That was a keeper league where I basically mortgaged my future, at least next year, for to try the win. But oh well, it happens. It was our first year in the league. Kind of got used to some things and had some lesson learns and things like that. But still grinding away in a few NFBC leagues and enjoying it, man. September 22nd, as this comes out, there's really like less than 2 weeks left in the season. I think it ends like the 4th or the 5th of October. So we're basically right there, man. So enjoying it while we have it.
Yeah, and then I don't know, Steve, if it's the next episode or the week after. Actually, that trip I thought I had got pushed back, so I'll be around, cool, which is good news. But dude, I'm pretty excited about the playoff picture this year. Like, is it me, or is there a lot more, you know, just to watch as like a neutral? Obviously, I'm in it with the Cardinals, but I don't really know that they're going to make a deep run necessarily. I just think it's an exciting time to be around baseball.
Absolutely, and I just think the expanded playoffs have been a good thing. I think those short series will be awesome. It's always nice to step back in the playoffs and just watch baseball without having to worry about your fantasy teams. I at least find that refreshing, where I'm not like switching the MLB TV app from one game to another to see who's pitching or finding an at-bat for me. I could just sit down and watch a intense, good playoff game. And, you know, to be honest, like, the quality games are much better in the playoffs just overall, just because there's better teams, so naturally. Not breaking any news there.
In the crowd, though, like, no one's really on their phones. Like, everyone's there watching the game. It's like the true sport versus us playing the game all season long, because like you said, we're kind of like hunting fantasy stats and all that stuff. But super excited. We'll have to talk about that plenty. But for today, Steve, we're talking about interesting late season performances. I know I kind of gave it the teaser on the intro. Anything to add on just the topic in general? I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but also I think there's a little bit of, you know, upside, if you want to throw out that word, to paying attention this time of year, just because you know that one out of maybe five, if not more, fantasy managers are pretty much turned off and moved on. So talk to me a little bit about the topic, then we'll get into a nice little mix of about eight names.
Yeah, and not even if you're not as tuned in or eliminated or just have some fatigue or a lot of people just move on to different things at this point of the year. You know, if you're chasing a category, like if you're chasing steals, right? Like you're on the waiver wire looking for that one category basically every day, right? Like your vision is sort of tunneled to that statistical need. I know that's probably a bit more nuanced than it actually is. Like you care about just good players in general at all times, whether you're going for categories or not. But you know, you make decisions.
Or if it's
late
like a
year,
third baseman, like a third baseman goes down, you're only looking for third baseman type.
Yeah. Thing. Or there's a lot more tunnel vision this year because it's so specific and so, okay, I need to do this. And you make decisions and cut guys that you normally wouldn't in redraft leagues. So it's just a different time of year than like a big picture sort of April breakout. So that could lead to a lot of guys going under the radar, and it's important to pay attention to these performances because there's sometimes changes that take place midseason that we might not notice, and guys that continue that we thought would fall off. It's a good topic, and I sort of wrote about it with some pitchers last year, and most have done pretty well as far as like second half performers for pitchers. It might be easier just because, at least for me, it's always easier to identify like pitching breakouts just because of those things that we talked about last week with like pitch mix, velocity change. So, but there's still some good hitters on this list too. So I think it's a great topic.
Well, let's hit on the process briefly. What we did was pretty much set a divider line on August 1st and looked at the performances since August 1. So this has got about, you know, seven-ish weeks of a sample size here. But Steve, why don't you lead us off? Again, these aren't going to be, you know, many of these guys are likely rostered. I think that's part tipping a cap to what we saw this year, but part looking into next year. But Steve, set us off with number one that you got.
Yeah, and for hitters, most guys have like somewhere between 160 and 190 plate appearances, so a pretty good sample, like almost the, you know, a little under a third of the season, which is substantial. So we're not dealing with super small samples here. But the first guy I wanted to break up, someone that I traded far too early in basically every league that I had him, and that's Michael Harris II. I remember to this day. How I found out about Michael Harris getting called up was I was at a party for a friend who ran the Brooklyn Half Marathon in late May. So I wasn't like glued into Twitter or to my phone, but I got a text from you about Michael Harris being called up and like, should we pounce? And the first thing I thought was, oh my gosh, you know, he's been called up. The news is an hour or so old, and my first come, first serve leaks, he's probably gone. And he wasn't, because I guess it was such a shock that he came up originally, and, you know, he was in double A.
Triple A.
Yeah. So, and, you know, he was a top prospect, but not like a Corbin Carroll or O'Neill Cruz that, like, were just on the precipice and, like, people were chomping at the bit to add him or stashed already. So we have two NA spots, and he wasn't even in one of those. So that sort of goes to show you in a 14-team league in my home league, you know, how shocking this all is. And, you know, another shocking stat for Michael Harris on the slugging leaderboard since 8-1, it goes as follows. It's Aaron Judge, who's slugging .779. Since August 1st. And then
that is ridiculous, dude.
Yeah, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. He's playing a different sport. It's insane what Aaron Judge is doing. Yeah, no need. We can go into that on a different show. Yeah. So he's number one, obviously. Then a gigantic gap, number two, Shohei Ohtani, another guy who's just having an absolutely insane season in his own right at .630. And number three, Michael Harris, .621 slugging since August 1st.
Wow.
That's qualified around the time. So, you know, everyone has that sort of minimum plate appearance threshold for the time. But Yeah. Michael Harris is third in the league in slugging since August 1st. So I was wrong to sort of cut bait early and chip him off as he had a little speed bump there in July. And I am regretting that I traded him in that keeper league that I was eliminated from this week. I am going to kick myself for that just because I would have had Harris at extreme discount for probably the next 3 years if I wanted to. So, you know, there are still some concerns, but those have had some improvements. You know, the O-swing and the swing strike for Michael Harris have gotten better marginally, but they've improved, which is what you like to see. On the year, he had a 43% O-swing, so chased 43% of the pitches that he saw outside the zone. Since August 1st, it's been 39%. So a 3% increase there. Improved his swing strike rate by about 2% from 14.3% down to 12.9%, so maybe a little less there, but still some improvements. You know, since that time, he's had a 24% strikeout rate, 5% walk rate, so kind of in line with what he's been doing. But what is encouraging with Michael Harris is that he always walked at close to 8 or 9% at every levels in the minor. So, you know, there is some track record of improvement there, and it's not like he's doing this with the super high K rate that would throw a red flag and give you sort of some, you know, Keston Hiura worries for next year, or, you know, even pre-breakout Austin Riley, where the K percentage was high and he needed to work to get that down. It's not like Harris needs to make these major adjustments. We would just like to see him chase a little less. So, you know, it's really, really picking nits with trying to find a problem in Harris's game. So it's just something to marvel at. You know, he's only gotten better as time's gotten on, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I mean, I wish he walked a little bit more. He's actually walked more throughout the minors. Granted, again, it wasn't necessarily too long of a look at high minors, but just a 4.2% walk rate on the season for Harris. But in 100 games, 18 homers, 16 steals, batting .305, and like you pointed out, Steve, it's only gotten way better in that since August 1 sample. He's batting .340. Granted, that's propped up by a BABIP that's well over .400, but he's also got speed, which is part of the profile. It just, you know, altogether, I mean, are we comfortable next year drafting him as like a .285, certainly 2020 guy, right?
I mean, I think if you want Michael Harris next year, you're going to have to pay for him in the second round.
Second, you think?
I don't see why not. Like, this is just...
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, he's almost
going to be 2020 this year in, you know, 115 games. He's two homers.
He's ranked
65th.
Yeah. Right now in 5x5, he's ranked 65 overall, and he's, you know, obviously missed a good chunk of the season before he got called up. So, yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, I was thinking maybe that this would be like a round four decision, but you're probably right with the age, and he's been batting sixth and seventh. You have to imagine next year,
like, think
he
about
moves up in the order.
Think about what happened with, you know, Louis Robert, you know,
Bichette, like some of these guys.
Yeah,
that
these guys with power and speed, and when they have good years with the average, you know, the price on those guys just skyrockets. Like, there's going to be so much helium around him in draft season, and, you know, maybe he'll start off as a third, fourth rounder, but I think by mid March we'll be talking about Michael Harris, second rounder.
So with this, I guess, analysis and saying that we like that, you know, A, it's not getting worse, B, things are kind of incrementally getting better. Has he moved in your books from I'm sprinting away from him on draft day because of the helium to, you know, if you're feeling froggy, that you could kind of go for a little mini discount if he maybe falls around or something in a draft.
I'm a firm believer in Michael Harris. I really think he is a very, very good player. I wish I held on to him in the leagues that I added him. I wrote him out, and you know, he brought me a lot of success where I do have him. It's nothing of what he's doing, right? It's just that like you're paying the premium, and I think I've learned sort of a harsh lesson, like don't pay for the premium on guys. You know, draft Judge when he's a second rounder. Don't draft Judge when he is the first overall pick next year.
That was part of your lesson learned.
Not saying that Judge shouldn't go one overall, whatever, but.
That's fair.
It just don't pay for, you know, past performance at a price that's inflated. So I don't know if I'll have that much Michael Harris, despite how much I like him next year.
Totally fair. And we'll have to watch. Man, unlucky that he and teammate Spencer Strider are just like duking it out over the. NL Rookie of the Year there, but that'll be fun to watch.
Don't they split those from time to time, or is that only in foot? Like, is it possible to tie or something like that? I know it's been a while. I know they did that in like the NFL, like with MVPs a while ago, but
yeah,
I think the voting would have to be exactly tied, right? Which would be pretty shocking.
It'd be fitting. Fitting though, because now Strider is the favorite, being. Just set the record for fastest player ever to get to 200 strikeouts, which I thought was insane.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, at this point, I think it's Strider, but Harris is right on the heel. So it'll be a lot of fun, but I see your point on the draft day. So we'll keep it moving here. And Steve, I know you had to have gotten a chuckle when you saw this on the rundown, but I had to call back in my boy, Mr. Eugenio Suarez, who anyone who's listened to the show for an extended period of time knows that he was. I was a firm fade on Suarez a couple seasons ago, and it felt like it was something we were monitoring every other week. This year, though, Steve, I got to defend myself that I was on the record saying, given where the discount fell, this was kind of in that Bobby Dalbec corner infield pop range that we kind of liked the bargain. And Suarez, you know, he was solid throughout the season, kind of in his own way, but since August 1st it has been special. Now of course we got to say that he hit the 10-day IL last Saturday, should be back for playoffs, but since August 1st Suarez 176 WRC plus. This is like good Suarez, like the 246 average. You can always count on the walks, a 352 on base and a 616 slug. 15 homers in that time for a 370 ISO. The ground ball rate has dropped, and he's turned a lot of those into fly balls, which is obviously what you want to see for a slugger like Suarez. Second in the majors since August 1st with a 59.4% fly ball rate, so really putting that power to use. And I kind of saved the best for last here. Since 8-1, just a 26.5% strikeout rate, which is what we've always said with Suarez. And if he can get out of his own way there, there's so much good power that he has. The first 4 months of the season, that strikeout rate was a 32.4%. So it dropped it almost six ticks. And yeah, now it's looking good, man. All of a sudden you look at the season line for Suarez. He's got 31 homers, 72 runs, 84 RBIs and counting, and the average at 235, especially in this environment, is kind of solid for a guy of his profile. So, you know, I just wanted to give him a shout out here. And next season, as you're drafting, this is a period I don't think you want to forget about with Suarez, cleaning up the plate discipline. And maybe instead of thinking like, oh, he's going to be a huge... he's going to tank my average, I can't completely sell out for power. Maybe there's a little renaissance going on here, Steve. What do you think?
Yeah, this is kind of exactly what I envisioned for Eugenio Suarez when I gave pushback on your sell of him last year. You know, like, this line is like kind of exactly what I envisioned and exactly what I pitched that could have been, you know, low average but a cheaper way to find 30 homers, you know. The K rate's going to be bad, but, you know, he'll live with it just because, you know, of that raw power. And looking at his Statcast sliders, like, you know, the outlier looks to be 2021. You know, all of the exit velos are in line with, like, the last, you know, 3 years. It's not 2018 when he was, you know, essentially, like, you know, like a top five round talent with, right, you know, a much higher average and a lot of homers. But, you know, a prototypical high strikeout, low batting average slugger, that's what he's back to being. You know, the barrel percentage is much better, and the hard hit numbers are more in line with what you expect from Eugenio Suarez. That being said, now that he's 31 and 32, despite this, these are the type of profiles that may just fall off a cliff without warning. Like, you know, there's always going to be 2021 in the back of my mind, and I think that just might happen again with these sort of profiles. I may miss out, but I may go elsewhere for, you know, cheaper power, especially considering the price might be a little bit inflated with how hot Suarez has finished the year.
Yeah, I'm curious about the price, but I've got a hunch that the memory has not gone away for people.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of, like, ballpark sizzle and all that stuff, which it hasn't been an issue for him, obviously. So, yeah, I think maybe the magic number is, like, almost where people were grabbing, like, I don't know, like, your Josh Donaldson's this year. It, like, I could see him landing in, like, the 175 and beyond range, which maybe I'm wrong. Maybe with this production, people will have him pushed up a little bit. But I think that would be maybe an okay way to, like, bolster your pop. But we'll have to see. I think it's just, it's important to call out that, you know, there's not only the home run to fly ball is, like, going up, but I like that the ground ball rate's dropping, the strikeouts are dropping. So, yeah, can't be ageist on this show, Steve. Mm-hmm. We gotta give some shouts. You know, he's just 31. He's not 37 or anything
true,
like that.
True,
but,
true.
Back to you. Let's get another hitter from your side of things.
Yeah, this one was surprising when looking at the 8-1 leaderboards. That's Dalton Varsho. He has, since 8-1, a 263, 11, 560 triple slash. That's good for 136 WRC+. And, you know, when you look at the overall line, yeah, sure, the homers and stolen bases are there, which is nice. 25 homers, 10 steals. He has been caught six times, which, you know, is a bit concerning. But, you know, a 243, 309, 459 slash isn't like, oh, wow, you know, Dalton Varsho was this amazing catcher that I drafted. But since that 8-1 arbitrary end date, he has just 23% strikeout rate, a 7.2% walk rate, so slightly better numbers on the plate discipline wise. And 12 of those 25 homers have come since 8-1. So there was a pretty large portion, you know, I think Dalton Varsho had like 8 homers through May, something like that, and then was really, really struggling. But quietly has picked it back up. And he has 27 games of catchers this year, so he should have catcher eligibility basically everywhere. I think NFBC is, what, 20 games, which is, you know, one of the stricter ones. So he's still going to carry that C, and, you know, maybe he won't play there at all next year since it's just been 27 games. But who cares? We'll worry about the next season. But Varsho was surprising to me. That's been a nice a homer binge for him since the calendar turned to August. And I was a bit surprised to see him up there just because with that slump that he went into in May, June, and I think through July, I'm looking at the monthly splits now. You know, there was a time where, you know, Varsho might have been dropped in some leagues. I think he just hit 176 with two homers in June and 250 with three homers in July, but has really picked it up since the calendar flipped. So a name to keep in mind, and you know that overall line might not inspire some helium that he saw as sort of this non-catcher last year. Maybe he'll go around the same price, which I think could be worth it.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it might be the season to do it. If, I mean, you look at what he's done this year, he's got 135 games in the bank and counting, and, you know, most of them are coming in the outfield. So if he's just got enough eligibility to carry the C, as you put it, but then they're running him out there every day as an outfield DH, then you get a, you know, you get a volume leg up on like your Real Mutos and Will Smiths and everything, because he's not sitting, you know, one out of every four games. So it's yeah, crazy. I think it could be a peak year to grab him potentially.
Varsho has a 99 outs above average and a 96 percentile outfield jump. So a guy who's caught 25 games is one of the best outfielders in the league. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's a great.
He is just
one.
A freak athlete. Yeah.
Yeah, 25-10. You know, you'll even take that average where it's at this season, but next year it could look even better with some of the plate discipline that you're highlighting. So, love it there for Varsho. The next one I wanted to call out is kind of near and dear to me, Steve, because I had Willy Adames flagged in a lot of leagues as a breakout pick. And, you know, overall it's been solid enough with, like, the pop especially. That's been the one thing everyone who rostered Adames was very familiar, that it'd be like, oh, here comes 1-for-5 with a two-run homer. And it's like, you'll take it, but then there were three strikeouts to go with it. And there was just kind of a frustrating, compared to the expectations of him in Milwaukee for a full season. But whether it was a little bit of the pressing or whatever the case was, up until August 1st, he hit just .219, and a big part of that was probably the .243 BABIP, but the strikeouts were a little bit high with the 27.4%, and it just, you know, it was frustrating to roster him. There was an injury mixed in there. Since August 1st, batting .275, and the BABIP is back up to .317, which is not unheard of for how hard he hits the ball. It's a little bit high. But the hard hit rate is also up from 33% up to 44.1%. So really kind of dialed in since August 1st. And the strikeout rate has dropped from 27.4% down to 23.6%. So in this little run, he's actually batting .275. The pop, like I said, has continued the whole season. He now has 30 bombs on the year, 7 stolen bases. The average is just .239, which will probably, you know, I doubt he'll raise it enough this year to where people will, you know, see that upside that I still would expect, I think, next year. I think the true talent for Adames is probably like a .255 to .265 player who can definitely hit 30 homers, help out a little bit with steals. And this was one that me personally, you know, I kind of was burned this season from expectations, at least from average. And so seeing that he's kind of flipped the scripts in the past 7 months from a batting average standpoint, I thought was worth calling out. But what are your thoughts on Adames, Steve?
Here's a nice little nugget for you. I know you don't really think of Adames as a guy that's going to be impacted by the new shift rules just because he's a righty and, you know, sure, he has a lot of pull side power, but I don't think, you know, it's not like a Joey Gallo or like Anthony Rizzo or something like that that comes to mind with shifts. But he's been shifted 25% of the time this year, which is the most he's been shifted in his career. His wOBA when the shift is on is .259. His wOBA when there is no shift is .359. So 100 different points different in wOBA with shift versus no shift. So next year with the shift sort of limited, it's not really banned. It just makes it more risky with the rules and having to have two infielders on each side. and on the dirt. Mike Petriello over from baseball, MLB.com and Savant has a great thread on it, on how it impacts things and what it's going to do. Now that we know the specifics of the rules, but hey, this should help Adames, and I would take the over on, you know, sort of that 230-ish batting line that he's going to finish with this year. And think he could be more like a 240, 250, you know, if there's a good BABIP season, 260 sort of guy, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, like, you know, the pop is real. Like, yeah, he's a 30 home run hitter, you know, in my mind, essentially, you know, if he plays a full season. So, definitely a really good option at shortstop.
Yeah, you get the feeling that it won't be kind of a sexy name on the draft board, because it kind of was that this year, and I think next year it might feel a little bit more oatmeal-y. So I think I'm going to be interested to see where the ADP falls with Adames. But let's go back over to you for one, Steve. Feel free to kind of take it any direction.
Yeah, you want to... Oh, okay. Hold on. There was one more pitcher here. That's one more hitter here before we can jump into some pitchers. We'll talk that too. But this was a good one. A guy that I wish I held on to. I think I talked about adding him for just a day in my home league, and things might have went differently if I actually didn't just stream him and held on to him. But that's Dalton Varsho's teammate, Jake McCarthy. Since August 1st, he is 11th in the league in batting average. He's hitting .324. He's got 14 steals with that, which is second in the league. I want to see who's first in the league. I'm going to look that up have a second. But
what's his name? He's got the funny name. It's what is it? Bubba.
Oh, Bubba Thompson.
Bubba Thompson. That's
wow,
right.
That's that's impressive, because Bubba Thompson. I have a qualified plate appearance here, filter on that, but yeah, that's also impressive, just because Thompson has not been up for that long. Yeah, it's just basically that whole time. I guess he came up early August. He has 40 games, so good on Bubba Thompson. That's a impressive total in just a month and a half. But back to McCarthy. I mean, you have here he's ranked fourth in 5x5 over the past month. He's chipped in 5 homers since August 1st. So, you know, I think once they traded Dave Peralta to the Rays, they just wanted to see what Jake McCarthy has. And I mean, you know, I know the Diamondbacks have Corbin Carroll and Alec Thomas and Varsho in that outfield. But hey, maybe that means more catching time for Varsho. They want to move on from Carson Kelly in Arizona, because it looks like they have 3 legit outfielders. I know Thomas has struggled a bit versus lefties, but you know, McCarthy, Carroll, and Thomas could be a nice little outfield there in Arizona. And their offense has quietly been pretty good in the second half. I know a lot of people targeted them as streams in the first half, but it really wasn't wise to do so against Diamondbacks, and McCarthy is a big reason why. I don't know if you have anything else to add. I know he was one of the guys you threw on the list, so
You do. I'm interested. I put that he's kind of a Tommy Edman Jr., just that there's, you're not going to count on the homers, but he might surprise you on a full season with like 13, and then you know the steals you could probably bank, and maybe this is a 280 guy that you can rely on. It's almost you know, it's in that kind of Stephen Kwan prototype, but I don't know,
probably some more power. I think some more power than Edmund and definitely for than Kwan too. The barrel rate isn't, you know, it doesn't jump off the page. It's just 5.9%. But hey, for a guy that's going to steal this many bases, you'll take it. You know, Edmund's sort of been that fluctuating between 5% barrel rate and then 3 in like his down years. It's up to 6.3% this year. So I think that's a pretty good overall comp. I know Edmund's a bit streaky, but yeah, the batted ball metrics are really, really similar. I think that's a great comp.
Yeah, and I mean it's you're gonna, I would imagine, get a discount there. So nice steel specialist that's not going to kill you in other categories, really, and might even, you know, help and be average in homers. So yeah, I just all around, I know we've talked about him a couple times, and you've brought him up very early, Steve. So credit to you on kind of the diamond in the rough there. But yeah, I just wanted to note again that if you see him cropping up on draft boards next year, that really ending the season very nicely here for McCarthy. So then we get into some pitchers, Steve, and you know, we'll have a few that you can hit on. I got a young guy I want to hit on, so we'll talk about pitchers, but first we're going to take a super quick ad break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
Okay, so Steve, you know, one of my first guys I wanted to look out here is none other than Brian Bayo, who I have been invested in. I went out and traded for him in my Dynasty League, and I just like what I'm seeing. I know it was really ugly when he came up, but since August 1st, in 26 innings, he has had a 26.1% strikeout rate. And really what popped for me the most was the 203 FIP, which was right up there for some of the top leaderboards, 10th in the league. The walks are still an issue, but in this time frame since August 1st, a 277 ERA, and again, about a strikeout per inning. So I still am pretty excited about Bayo, and I know it's kind of been a season to forget for the Red Sox, but this is one that I'm definitely going to be taking flyers on next season. And, you know, again, kind of if it's not working early, just be agile on the wire and everything. But if he can sort the walk issues, I think we're kind of seeing that when it goes right, it can go right. And it's kind of that Dylan Cease thing we talked about, obviously a little bit less K rate. But I like betting on the pitchers that all they need to do is sort the walk rate a little bit, and the rest of it could click. So that's my first one to kind of lead us off. Not sure if there's anything to add or your overall thoughts on Bayo. I know we've talked about him a couple times.
You're speaking my love language, man. Like this episode is is going to be my pitching staff for 2023. But yeah, these are exactly the type of pitchers that I like to target. And, you know, Bayo might be a little bit more of a late round flyer, but good, man. I hope that line doesn't look as good as he's pitched over the last few weeks, just because, you know, he's had the stuff and it's just sort of a matter of figuring it out. And sometimes takes these guys, you know, a few go rounds up in the majors to take their bumps and bruises. But Bayo's changeup is just absolutely ridiculous. His stuff looks great. Even, you know, when he was getting, you know, hit hard and bouncing back between AAA and the majors, the stuff was never in question. So exactly the type of guy that I'm going to be taking a lot of flyers on next year. You know, I'm sure we'll be saying, hey, you know, drafted Bayo as my SP6, but hey, you know, if things go right, he's my SP2, you know. Exactly talked myself into those sort of builds next year, and Bayo will definitely be a deep target in mine. I think that's a great call.
Yeah, and I think, most of these guys on here, we're trying to avoid some of the very top-end names. We did it for hitters, too. I mean, there were names I was looking at that, like, you know, Arenado and Bregman have just been excellent lately, and it's like even better than I
have
realized. But it's like, yeah, how much can you?
We wanted to keep the surprise factor here a little bit, but you know, maybe these next few guys will be sort of they aren't super surprises, but guys that I'm probably going to be drafting as an SP2, or you know, we're bumping them up. Where if their ADP's SP3, I'll be bumping up to my SP2. If their ADP's SP2, I'm going to bump them up to SP1. Like those sort of things. That's what I like to do with my pitchers. I like to take my risks there, and I promise you, I'm going to be more conservative
Take
hitters. Yeah. Take hitters.
And your other lesson was take more of them. So maybe you can run some of these guys like back to back to back or something.
But sure.
Let's hear one, Steve, and then we'll kind of bounce back and forth.
I think this guy was rookie of the month for August, so not too surprising, but that's George Kirby. Since August 1st, he's had 44.1 innings pitched, a 2.03 ERA, a 1.26 FIP, a 2.85 xFIP, a 28.7% strikeout rate, and just a 2.3% walk rate. And all of that with a 3.39 BABIP. You know, it probably helps that he's got a 47% ground ball rate, but yeah. This guy has elite command. He has not given up a home run in this time frame. Like, his homer per nine is zero. And what's even more interesting about Kirby is that, you know, Nick talks about it a lot and has talked about it a lot this year, that there's kind of a swing and miss secondary missing, but I think he's starting to unlock that as he's, you know, upping the usage on his curveball as we go throughout the year. He's added a sinker that he's thrown more, which has helped unlock some swing and miss, and he's been getting a lot of called strikes with that too. So I really think that there might be another strikeout level here with Kirby, you know, if that happens, like, look out. That's SP1, you know, with this command, this fastball velocity. If he could just find that strikeout pitch, and as he's doing that and mixing with his pitch arsenal and tweaked his cutter, which was, you know, he threw in the beginning of the year to a slider, that sort of lines up very nicely. That happened around mid-July. With this run, so I think that despite this amazing run of a 2.03 ERA with barely any walks and no home runs, there might be even another level for Kirby if he could just unlock that secondary pitch and get more out of his slider and get some whiffs there.
Yeah, so Kirby is 5x5 ranked 150 right now. So do you think that he might be going like SP3 type of range, and you're willing to kind of climb up to SP2?
So. Yeah. That's exactly what I would be thinking there.
Okay. No, I like that a lot, Steve. So let's stay in that kind of that tier. And I know you also wanted to highlight Mr. Drew Rasmussen, who has kind of been a little bit of right out of the gate this season. I think people were kind of rushing to add him when they knew he got the rotation spot. And the season line has been pretty solid for Rasmussen. 126 innings on the strikeout rate is 22% on the year. K minus BB is 16.9. Again, these are yearly stats here. But in the past, you know, 6-7 weeks, the K rate has gone up to 26.3%. The FIP is just a 2.34. So a lot to look at with Rasmussen as it comes to his last 44 innings. Is this another guy that you've got marked as kind of a late riser on the Steve Gisuelli pitching chart?
Absolutely. Traded for Willie Adames, right? I think that was the deal. And
ooh,
everyone thought that the Rays got heisted in that, or you know, taken to the cleaners. But you know, leave it to the Rays to find a guy. I think that had two Tommy John surgeries, was a reliever, and turned him into a guy that has you know, an under the three ERA and 128 innings pitched this year, which is absolutely insane. But you know, he's got two really good pitches by run value. He has a four-seamer that had a negative 10 run value and a cutter at a negative 11 run value. And his slider last year was really good. It hasn't been as good as results with results this year. But, you know, it's still got a 28% whiff percentage and a 33% strikeout rate. So pretty good there across the board with that three-pitch mix. And you know, since that August 1st, he's gone to like another level. It's a 2.03 ERA, a 26% strikeout rate, and just a 3% walk rate. Sure, there's some luck involved here, more so than with Kirby, because he's at a 2.46 BABIP and 81% left on base percentage. But he does have that nice 49% ground ball rate. You know, keeping the ball in the yard, which will do him some favors in that luck department. So, you know, there might be some more injury concern here, just because, you know, he has had two Tommy Johns. This has been his biggest workload, I think, since, you know, as far back as the data goes on Savant, and just quickly looking at Fangraphs, I think, you know. It would have to be in the minors, just because, you know, before this, the highest total that he had was last year with 87 innings, which, you know, is a bit of concern. But, you know, leave it to the Rays to find this guy and get the most out of him, and hats off to them. It's just sort of why you still have to pay attention to when the Rays acquire guys and throw them in the starting rotation. Like, there's a reason. They know something, and Drew Rasmussen is the perfect example of that. And I think because of those factors, because of my concerns, the price still might be depressed next year, despite an ERA under 3 with good peripherals.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be kind of a pairing of names, because he's looked so similar to his teammate recently, Jeffrey Springs, who's right next to him on a lot of these boards. And in terms of the K rate, Springs is at 27% since August 1st. Rasmussen is 26.3%. Rasmussen's control has been even better. And then both of them have been, you know, lights out when it comes to like a sub-3 ERA, a sub-1 whip. I think, you know, Springs is probably going to go a couple rounds ahead of Rasmussen. And, you know, not to put you on the spot, Steve, but, like, your thoughts on Springs, do you think that kind of two-round price premium on Springs is going to be worth it, or would you rather hold off and lean toward Rasmussen?
I think I'd go Rasmussen, just because I like his the actual pitches better with that fastball and cutter. I think he's got quote unquote better stuff. I don't have the inner stuff numbers in front of me, but I mean, mm-hmm. Springs still has three pitches that have a negative 5 run value or better in the sinker, slider, and changeup, 5, 7, and 8, respectively.
Yeah,
you know, that probably might be then more of just like a cost, like I'll take whoever goes later. Like, you know, mm-hmm. if Springs is going earlier, I'll just wait and grab Rasmussen. But, you know, Springs is good too, man. He's great at getting whiffs, and 96th percentile in chase rate, 72nd percentile in strikeout percentage. I definitely would have taken the under on this, and he does limit some quality contact too, above average in like barrel and average exit velocity too, for mm-hmm. all that. So I like Springs. Went to Appalachian State, so you know, I'm sure he had some fun when they upset Texas A&M a few weeks ago in football, but I digress.
Yeah, no, it's I think the point is we like Rays pitching, yep. But we'll leave that for another show topic when we start looking at too early ADP and all that good stuff. But the other one that kind of jumps out at me, Steve, and it's an older name kind of on brand with me going for the old heads here, but Carlos Carrasco has really looked a different pitcher lately. His last outing, granted against the Pirates, 6 innings, 11 strikeouts, and he's really been putting together multiple really good starts in a row. And Carrasco, under the hood, has started throwing his changeup a heck of a lot more since August and kind of dialed back the slider. So he's definitely tinkering. And from a results standpoint, it looks pretty good here with basically his leading up to August 1st. The K rate was around like 20, or the K percentage was around like 22. Since then, it's been up to like 28.2%, just a 5.6% walk rate, a 331 FIP. So I know Carrasco, it kind of feels like we've all been down this road and it's a little bit of ups and downs, but he's at least got my attention for the end of the season here on, you know, some of the changes he's made. And I mean, that change up that he's now leading with at 35% of the time this month is his primary pitch, has a 37% whiff rate, which is great. And overall, I think it's just kind of worth noting that, you know, since Carrasco's returned and kind of tinkered a bit here, that he's really tapping into some good results. So that's just another one I wanted to throw under the hat. I don't know if you want to add to that at all, or if you want to go to your final pitcher.
No, I think that's a great call, and maybe this was an injury thing. Maybe he didn't have the feel, but you know, Carrasco, Carrasco was like one of my original like late round draft Carrasco as an ace sort of pick, and you know, I rode him in many leagues for years, and you know, the knock on him was that he had a bad fastball. He went to the bullpen with Philadelphia, then, you know, gained that velocity when he went over to Cleveland, and it stuck in the bullpen in the rotation when he made the move back. But he always got by because his secondaries were just so good, including that changeup. And last year, you know, maybe he was coming back from injury, he threw the fastball, you know, more than he ever has since basically that 2017-2016 breakout. So you know, maybe he just didn't have feel for his off-speed stuff, and now it looks like that's back. I know that you know, this isn't vintage Carlos Carrasco, and there's been some blow-ups, and it's more of a mid to high 3 ERA, but I think that, you know, maybe this overall line just more steady as he sort of is another year further from that injury-riddled season, and I know it was a bit different. Going through like a cancer diagnosis, that could also lead to some things. But you know, he's still great at getting whiffs. I don't think he'll be Carlos Carrasco ace, but I think he could definitely be Carlos Carrasco, extremely undervalued 36-year-old pitcher. You know, maybe a Charlie Morton light type of thing here with Carrasco, just because those secondaries are so good and always have been.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really well said. And so now his season line, as you kind of put on your draft hat for next year and what all managers will be seeing, is a 3.7 ERA. The whip is at a 1.29. And again, the strikeout rate on the season is like a 24%. But just to remind that in these splits, a 28% K rate, the whip is down to 0.73, and the ERA I don't have in front of me, but it's been much better. Like over the past month, he's been a 1.84 ERA, so he's definitely like tapping into it. So yeah, I like what you said. It's just kind of that Charlie Morton, like, don't forget about kind of the old guys who can really, you know, you might even be able to grab him as like an SP4.
Great back end of the staff filler. Yeah, if he's going around there, that's absolutely perfect. Yeah, exactly.
Well, round us out, Steve, with your final pitcher here for the late season improvers.
Yeah, saving my best for last. I don't know if I've officially, not that anyone cares or anything, or I need to hitch my wagon to one guy, but like the guy that's going to be my, or you know, at least the early leader to be like my McClanahan Cease of next year is Nick Lodolo. I have absolutely fallen in love with what he's been doing over the last, 50 innings and 49 innings pitched since August 1st. He got 3.49 ERA, 3.37 FIP, 3.26 xFIP, but that's with a 30% strikeout rate and a 7.2% walk rate. Yeah, sure, a little bit high of walks, but we just spent the whole show talking about how like this is the last thing that these guys need to unlock. And you know, the command grades on Lodolo coming up, just looking at like his Fangraphs blurb, is that he has exquisite command, which gives him a good chance to find success in the majors. So, yeah, I'm betting that command improves, especially as he's sort of battled a bit of injury this year. I know that's another knock on him, but hey, that's sort of the risk you have to take with these guys. The season line for him, 87 innings pitched, 3.81 ERA, 30.3% strikeout rate. So, you know, the same rate that he's been doing it since August 1st. The walk rate was a bit elevated at 8%, so nice to see that come down, even if it's just a little bit. And what I think will keep the cost relatively affordable is the fact that he's only at 87 innings pitched. I know he had 10 innings pitched, or 12 innings pitch in the minors on rehab starts. So, you know, he's close to 100 right now. But that total is going to be what? I'm sure he has probably like 3 starts left, maybe. So maybe he'll have 120 innings on the major league level, 130 innings overall, something like that. So there will be an innings concern, but I say bring it on. You know, look at what McClanahan did after just 130, 140 the year before with some postseason innings tacked on. So I am going to be loving me some Nick Lodolo next year, and he might be a guy that I target as a chance to be an SP1 for 2023.
Oh, I love it, dude. And for one, on our lessons learned, one of the ones we talked about was for all the people we came into the season saying, like, there's going to be an innings limit here and there. Like, sometimes that can be a crapshoot. The guys mm-hmm. you think are workhorses don't work out, and then the guys who you think are 120 go 155 and so on and so forth. But so I like that. I think the other thing is Lodolo has nicely flown under the radar to some extent. I mean, I know everyone knows he's talented, but I think next year the Christian Javiers, the Spencer Striders, like some of those names will be really kind of taking up. I mean, even Kirby's made a lot of noise with just like the ridiculous mm-hmm. walk rate, but like Lodolo with the Reds and everything, it's not to say that he won't have some helium with how filthy his line is and his strikeout upside, but yeah, I don't think it's quite to the extent as some of those other flashier names. So he was even overshadowed this season coming into it by Hunter Green.
That's
what everyone was like. Oh, yeah. I think Nick Pollock was like, Lodolo is the one to watch, not Hunter Green. So credit to Nick on that call as well. But yeah, I love it, man. I think this is a great one. He obviously completely fits the mold for the Steve Gisuelli try to catch lightning in a bottle as like an SP1. So yeah, where, assuming your league mates aren't listening, I mean, do you have a gut instinct? Like, so McClanahan this past season was like around the 100 range. So if we start a benchmark there, I feel like Strider's going to be going much sooner than that.
Yes.
Lodolo, you know, does he land around there, around like pick 100, or do you think he goes a little bit later?
Maybe a little later. It's a bad ballpark, a bad team. The innings concern, the injury history. You know, I know Keith Law made some noise by excluding him or keeping him way down on his prospect list because of an injury concern and injury history. So there are some detractors, and you know, it just doesn't seem like it's got that Dylan Cease type hype yet. Who knows with draft season? You know, it just needs one popular analyst to do a Twitter thread and break down this amazing Nick Lodolo, you know, pitch mix and strikeouts and pitching ninja gifts for him to bump up to pick 100. But, you know, it seems like, you know, as someone that, you know, loved McClanahan and Cease last year at this time for next year, the hype might not be quite at that level, which gives me some sort of encouragement that it might be an even more affordable cost, and maybe I'll be grabbing him as my SP2, which would be ideal.
Yeah, I think that seems reasonable. Yeah, maybe just in that next wave, a few rounds behind that. So that's great. I think the last thing, Steve, and I know it's not a fully valid one because of the injury, but we talked about Justin Steele a handful of times, and I think we just got to call out that in the 28 innings for Justin Steele since this date range, a 35.5% strikeout rate. And I feel like he's the one where everyone's just kind of waiting for the regression fairies and waiting for it to come back down to earth. But, man, he's going to be another one that it's almost that Nestor Cortez type of thing where I could hear all offseason people saying, like, I don't think this is for real. But I personally will be taking shots to see if, you know, 12 strikeouts in seven innings, that has my attention, and he's hit double digit strikeouts multiple times this year. So I'm interested in Steele as kind of a sneaky one there.
Absolutely. Don't let me forget about him next draft season like we did with Cortez, even though you took him in the pitcherless mock draft. We were going back and forth off air about how good those teams were. I think I had like Judge, Alonso, McClanahan, Otani,
I forgot who else.
Yeah. Like everyone that Nick reamed me on for my staff, it's like, dude, you work for Pitcherless. Come on. You are Pitcherless. This was a good staff. What was wrong with your, you know?
The problem is, as soon as he challenged us, we just folded like a lawn chair. Yeah. We're like, you're right, Nick. You're right. I don't know what I was thinking with this one.
Next year, if we do have the benefit of doing this again, I am definitely going to bring up that my staff that was ripped to shreds by him. I didn't take a picture till the eighth round. This mock draft was Otani, Darvish, Luis Garcia, Adam Wainwright, Tristan McKenzie, Christian Javier. So yeah, that staff would have done pretty well. I wish this was a real league, but whatever.
Yeah, and then he's going to be like, well, Lodolo's not Otani. Yeah, this can't be your SP1.
Yeah,
it's great. All right, well, that wraps us up for the week. Thanks again, you guys, for tuning in. Hope the end of the season is being kind to you, and we will still be back at least next week on Thursday as well to kind of wrap up and do some hindsight stuff. So that's everything we got for episode 74. Again, you guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_Verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. But that does it, Steve. Any closing thoughts or words of wisdom from you?
No, man. And enjoy the fantasy baseball while we have it. Excited to do a few more regular season shows and then get to this prep. So thanks, as always, for talking baseball with us, guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks, everybody.